This is the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio. I'm joined now by Hugh Hewitt, the radio talk show host with the Salem Radio Network, MSNBC analyst. But what a lot of people don't realize, and those who don't follow closely, is that Hugh's a lawyer, constitutional law professor at Chapman University Law School as well. Hugh Hewitt, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Dan, thanks for having me on. I was surprised as I got ready to talk to you to learn that you'd published Lincoln's Last Trial. We have to scold your publisher for not sending me a book because that's right in my alleyway. We should have talked about this already. Maybe I'll ask for it for Christmas.
Well, you know what?
I really had no idea you had written this.
Yes, and you know, my next book is on a big trial with Theodore Roosevelt, where he was the defendant in a libel case in 1915. He testified for 8 days. Franklin Roosevelt testified in his defense. So you now know that's coming out in May, and we can definitely talk about that one.
You have now hit a sort of a line of books. Are you going to go after Great Trial? I mean, everyone knows about the Scopes Trial, but there have got to be like 100 different trials with historical persona in it.
We're focusing on trials with transcripts. So that's
smart.
It's been good. But thank you. Good niche. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. So let's go through. You know, you are a call-em-as-you-see-em conservative, and, you know, you don't necessarily know where you're going to come down on different issues. So I want to figure out where you come. Now, let's start with this Flynn hearing. So I've been going off on this judge who I think went way overboard with questions about treason and then, you know, misstating when Flynn was working with the Turks, et cetera, which seems to me just unacceptable for a judge in a high-profile case like this.
100% agree, Dan. Now, I have stayed very far away from the conservative slice of the pie that wanted to claim that General Flynn had nothing to plead guilty to. He lied to the FBI agents. He pled guilty. He affirmed his plea. He was going to get a sentence for 18 U.S.C. 1001. And you and I both know that's an all-purpose statute. But it's a federal crime to lie when you are speaking to an FBI agent or to a federal committee, whatever. But then Judge Sullivan goes off on a tear about treason. And I just view that as wholly inappropriate, especially for a highly decorated war hero, widely regarded as the greatest intelligence officer of his generation, to accuse him of treason with no opportunity. He's standing there. He can't say anything. He's endangering his plea. I've never seen anything like it.
And you know what? You're right. I didn't even focus on this point enough, which is, look, when you're sentencing someone, their history and their background are relevant. And one of the major points that Flynn made in his sentencing memo was his history as a decorated veteran. And it does make it that much worse, in my view, for the judge to be throwing out treason with zero evidence that would be an appropriate crime. And the prosecutor was shocked.
Yeah, zero evidence. Now, they're only, it's like he was reading in the fever swamp, sort of like the pizza, Comet pizza stuff. Because Flynn did go to the RT thing. He did take $85,000. There are allegations he represented Turkey. These are bad things. They are not treasonous things. He's the guy who basically got Zarqawi along with McChrystal and the intelligence operation in Baghdad. They figured out where Zarqawi. That saved thousands of lives. He was at the tip of the spear for a very long time in Afghanistan. So to accuse a guy like that, he comes from a hardscrabble Rhode Island family as well, big Catholic family, 8, 9 brothers, something like that. I've only met him a couple of times, but he's a hard-charging, hard-nosed guy who got thrown out of the DIA by Obama because he was at loggerheads. But to accuse him of treason, it's sort of like accusing a lawyer of the willingness to be disbarred times 100.
Mm-hmm.
Something like looting your client's trust fund times 1,000
right.
is what he did to Flynn.
So, and even though he came back and apologized, you know, didn't apologize, even though he corrected the record, so to speak, but the idea that he comes in either so unprepared that he didn't know when Flynn was working with the Turkish government and when he wasn't, or... Yeah. That he just wanted to stick it to him because Flynn stupidly put in his sentencing memo that business about the FBI and suggesting that maybe he was entrapped. But it's just, you know.
Yeah, can I add one word, Dan?
Yeah.
He ought to come down off of the bench and apologize because the moment he let fly with the word treason, that took off on Twitter faster than any. You'll never get it back. Mark Twain said a lie is halfway around the world before truth gets its boots on. Sullivan will never get that back. Flynn will never get that back. It is a shameful day in the courts.
And when people say, well, he was just asking a question, it's like, you know, Donald Trump asks a lot of questions on Twitter that are, that, you know, people say to me, who knows? And the answer is, well, of course we know the answer to that. He's not really asking a question. So anyway.
No, it's Comet Pizza stuff. It's where the web goes crazy with conspiracy theories, and it is up to the Sullivans of the world. I hope you and I approach journalism the same way, just to avoid the fringes. Just keep the crazy people at the edge of the lunatic asylum. And let's carry on the conversation about what's, you know, in the middle.
Well, and as I always say, Hugh, and I talk on the show a lot about the fact that I view myself as looking at these legal issues typically through a pro-law enforcement prism. I tend to be pro-law enforcement. I always have been. And, you know, I think that part of that means ensuring that we stick to the rule of law. And I have a lot of people. I had a guest here who is a left-leaning host on one of the channels here who was basically talking about Mueller. Oh, I'm waiting for Mueller. We got to all. And I said, okay, what if Mueller doesn't give you what you're looking for? What if Mueller comes back and says, you know what? We don't think that Donald Trump was involved. I said, will you then say you will accept Mueller's finding? You know, we got to say, wait, what do you mean? What do you mean? Yeah. We got to follow. If you're either a rule of law guy or you're not a rule of law guy. And that's it.
Yeah, I'm in with it or out with it.
All right.
And when Mueller comes down, I don't buy anything about, you know, the president goes after his team. I don't care if they give contributions. I give contributions. It doesn't affect my lawyering. I believe that whatever Mueller says, I will read the report. I will be persuaded or I won't be persuaded, just because Ken Starr, the report, didn't stop James Carville from criticizing it. But I'm inclined to believe Mueller because I was in the DOJ when Bill Webster was the head of the FBI. And I served on the D.C. Circuit back in the day of the independent counsel statute when we would appoint the independent counsel. These are serious lawyers with serious cred. And if they come back with a series of charges that have metastasized away from collusion, that does not delegitimize the charges. It doesn't get the president off.
Yep.
I just think people ought to shut up and wait for the report.
I agree.
And I don't know what's in it.
I agree. All right. So before we switch topics, a lot of people want to ask about this. Let's just take a couple. Brian from Arizona joins us. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. What's going on?
Great. Well, you know, I heard your show yesterday, Dan, as you discussed the aborted sentencing hearing. And I think that, you know, I think your perspective is a little bit geared up inappropriately. I mean, it is not unusual for a judge to be presented with a sentencing recommendation or in the civil context, the settlement of a civil case, and he or she says, "I think this is inappropriate."
That's not what happened here. Meaning, if the judge had said, "Look, I know you guys have agreed to no prison time, but I think that the crime here is significant. I think the crime here is more severe. I'm sentencing him to the maximum of six months in prison." Would I disagree with the judge on that? Yes. But I wouldn't have gone off on him the way that I did, because that's not the same as throwing out the most serious crime you can allege against someone and say, you know, did you guys consider it? I mean, Brian, don't you think that's different?
Well, I think that your observation that the judge should have had a better working knowledge of the file before he shot his mouth off is appropriate.
Okay.
Well, look, I've been in countless situations in my previous career when I was a practicing attorney where judges went off on us because, and in my day, they were almost all males, but he didn't like the deal. So, you know, Judge Sullivan was so exercised by the prospect of this guy walking without doing any jail time that he probably just let it get the better of him. And that shouldn't ever happen to any judge, let alone a federal district court judge. You know, but the fact of the matter is, this deal that, this was all terrible and all this sort of stuff. In the end result, Sullivan did General Flynn and his counsel a favor by giving them a way out.
But what's the out? What's the out? What else is he going to do? I mean,
the out is if he continues to cooperate with Mueller, and Mueller comes back and says, yes, Judge, he's done it. We really, really think he should not do jail time. He's got a chance.
But here's the thing. I don't know what else he can. But
this
I don't wait. Let me,
just like double jeopardy to me. And Dan, I don't know if this is why you went off on it yesterday. The prosecutor made a deal. The prosecutor was happy. He could have given him 6 months and said, you lied in the West Wing, and I'm pissed off about that. But to throw him back out for 3 months is to torture the guy after he had done the deal.
Yep.
And it's just double jeopardy in my opinion.
Brian, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Dave from Connecticut. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Hey, Dan. I appreciate what both you and Mr. Hewitt have been saying. The thing that I think that the judge was reacting to was twofold. One was somewhat inappropriate. The other, not so much. The thing that was inappropriate was the fact that you had a number of conservative talking heads saying, oh, Judge Flynn should be throwing out these charges. He could throw out the whole thing. He can dismiss this because these aren't real crimes. And his point was, yeah, not only are these real crimes, but it could have been worse. Now, should he have thrown out the treason word? No. Could he have couched it in a way of, counsel, have you checked all of the applicable statutes, and are you sure that this is the appropriate charge? That would have been a little less onerous. The other thing that he was reacting to was the sentencing memo that was provided by the defense, where he basically was saying tongue-in-cheek through his lawyers, you know what, the FBI kind of bilked me on this, which is why he went through the allocution that he did. You do know that it's a crime to lie to the FBI.
Those were all fair questions. But when he went beyond that, and that's when he lost it. Our previous caller was saying, you know, now maybe he'll help prosecutors more. The answer is he's already sat down with them 19 times. When the prosecutors were asked, do you think he can be helpful in the future? They said, well, we think he might. We don't know. Why? Because they don't have anything else they need from him right now. It's not like they're saying, please help us more. Please help us more. And he's finally saying, okay, I'll do it. Instead, what's happened is he's helped in every way he can. 19 times. There's nothing else they can get from him for now. So,
and Dan, I agree. In fact, the one thing we can't speak about, because I don't have firsthand knowledge about what kind of judge Judge Sullivan is, I've appeared in front of some pretty hard-ass judges before. Judge David Carter in Orange County, buddy of mine, Marine. Judge Manny Rael in L.A., pretty tough-minded judge. I've argued in front of Stephen Reinhardt on Ninth Circuit, pretty tough-minded judge. You know, judges can be hard-asses sometimes, but this is outside of the bounds of anything I've ever seen. To drive way down the road, turn left, go off of the freeway, drive 5 miles, and introduce treason into an 18 U.S.C. 1001 plea bargain that's signed, sealed, delivered, and wrapped in a package because he's been reading conspiracy theories on the web. That's all I can just gather is that he was mad at the talking heads. I think your caller's right.
Yeah. So what do you think? Let's switch topics now. I want to talk about the Trump Foundation. I mean, you know, what do you make of Trump's tweets basically saying this is all political and that it's just sleazy Democrats who are out to get him?
No, I'm a balls and strikes conservative. I ran OPM for a while in Reagan, and we regulated every charity that worked the combined federal campaign. That's a big United Way for the federal government. It's got the biggest charity fundraiser in the world. And so I was hell on wheels on charities that represented themselves as being doing the common good and then had 80% overhead. I don't know the particulars of the Trump Organization charity, but that it is dissolving is to me an admission against interest, isn't it to you?
Sure.
I mean, charities that do good don't dissolve because someone's mad at them.
But it's not just do good. I mean, putting aside the absurd things that the money was going towards, which I've already sort of talked about to some degree, I mean, I love the fact that when they asked Alan Weisselberg, who was supposed to be the official treasurer of the organization, he didn't know that he was on the board. And they asked him what the policies were to determine whether his payments were proper. And he said, well, there is no policy, just so you understand. I mean, he's basically saying, look, it's not a real foundation. Stop talking to me as if it's real.
Yeah, I busted some cherries back in the day in the 80s for Reagan, and it's nothing to get sympathy from me. I think it's a minor footnote. It's not teachable offense, but it's like the campaign finance alleged violations, if they're a violation. We're not going to throw the president. We're not even going to get it out of the house this way. So I put it in the right category. But it is, they shouldn't make light of it. The president should not make light of it. He should say, I'm sorry this happened. I wasn't paying attention.
I'm sorry that we directed $100,000 in foundation money to be used to settle legal claims over an 80-foot flagpole that was built.
I think Michael Cohen must have been making the call.
You know what?
I don't know who the lawyer was, right?
I'm sure it was. The foundation paid $158,000 to resolve a lawsuit over a prize for a hole-in-one contest. I mean, it's too good. I mean, that in addition to the portraits of Donald Trump that they bought, it's just,
It's like asking to get enforcement. I've been lawyering for 30 plus years. The stuff that went on with that foundation makes my eyes roll. But again, it's not impeachable offense stuff. I don't know if some of your listeners want the president dragged through the street, but it's charitable enforcement stuff. It's not impeachable offenses.
I agree. And did you see, Hugh, that same judge, Judge Sullivan, is the one who wrote the 107-page opinion today on on the asylum, basically saying that the president can't deny people categorically asylum for requests, claiming that they were victims of gang violence or kidnapping.
Yeah, I did see that. Now, I don't know where you come down on this. I do not like nationwide permanent injunctions issuing from one district court. That is a rising trend in America where some district court judge...
Agreed.
It's gone both ways, by the way. A Texas district court judge enjoined President Obama's Dreamers Act. And so we've got Judge Sullivan enjoining this whole thing. We're not supposed to have nationwide permanent injunctions issuing from one district court judge. We're supposed to get up to the appeals court, see if there's a division in the circuits, send it to the Supremes if that's the case. And so I'm a little bit suspicious of that. And so I'll go read the opinion at some point. But I also always say it's a district court. Call me when the D.C. Circuit weighs in.
Yeah. I want to talk about this curious case of this is the mystery Mueller opponent, who we've been talking a lot about, speculating what has been going on. Who has Mueller been fighting with over a subpoena to testify? And in a 3-page filing on Tuesday, Mueller was handed a victory in the case. And there was, a lot of speculation about who it was. And we now know that it was a corporation that was owned by a foreign government. And the reason we know that is from the ruling that has been working its way through the courts. The D.C. Court of Appeals decided to, quote, decline to resolve whether foreign sovereigns are entitled to a claim of protection of FSIA immunity provisions. That what they'd said is, textually speaking, nothing in the law purports to strip the district courts of criminal jurisdiction. Basically, the company was arguing that the court didn't have jurisdiction, also that its own nation doesn't allow it to comply with a subpoena. And the ruling says, we find the government satisfied its burden of establishing a reasonable probability this action is based upon an act outside the territory of the United States in connection with a commercial activity of the foreign state elsewhere, and that the act caused a direct effect in the United States. We therefore agree that the act does not immunize the corporation from this subpoena. And the unnamed corporation argued it couldn't comply with the subpoena because it was unreasonable and oppressive, basically saying it would require the corporation to violate its own country's law. Hugh Hewitt, is this Russia?
I think it has to be. And I looked at the panel. This is my old court, Dan. I clerked on the D.C. Circuit 1,000 years ago in the 80s.
Yep.
David Tatel, Thomas Griffiths, Steve Williams. These are not liberal judges. These are good law and order judges. These are very experienced judges. I've never seen anyone close a courtroom before. So the courthouse. I've never seen this. I've never even heard of it before. And so it's got to be Russia. I suspect it's the troll farm. I suspect that we are alleging that the troll farm is an agent of the GRU. And that's the Army Intelligence Operation of Russia, and that they do not want to respond. They made a mistake. The GRU people made a mistake in one of their filings, and they may have attached jurisdiction. pretty complicated stuff, pretty interesting stuff, but I've never heard of it before. Have you?
But no, but here's the question, right? So everyone talks about the indictments, the two big indictments, the 12 Russians and the 13 Russians, one for the Internet Research Agency, essentially the allegation that they were trying to fool people by taking on fake identities and try to influence the election in that way. And then there's the other indictment, which is of the hacking itself. And a lot of people have said, well, you know, it's just a bunch of Russians who are never going to be able to be brought to justice anyway. Why do you think this organization is it because they're doing business in the United States and therefore they have assets here, et cetera?
Yeah, I think I don't know any of the filings, but the Alien Tort Claims Statute provides for some occasional far reaches at assets of countries if they are involved in any surreptitious kind of activity. And it's a bizarre statute. It's very difficult to get at. But Mueller, one of the criticisms of the special counsel is that he's brought in a bunch of indictments against people that can never be gotten at.
Right.
Well, in fact, maybe he's found a way. Maybe he has found some assets that belong to the Russians that he would like to attach as part of a proceeding against them for damages against the United States in the course of plundering our election. If he'd good on him, I'm all for that. So what an interesting case. I can't wait to read
right.
the unsealed filing.
Let me ask you something. As someone who is a law and order conservative, you're asked this question a lot. How are people that, you align with politically, are they justifying attacking Mueller himself the way that they have? Meaning that this is a long-time Republican, but more importantly, someone who has had so much respect in terms of his career and what he's accomplished. And you have people now who claim to be law and order people, many on the right, who are just summarily dismissing him or worse.
Yeah, I don't have any time for them, and I push back. Mueller walked the walk after 9/11, when going to work every day in Washington, D.C., or New York, was actually going to work in a place you thought was going to be attacked again. And he mobilized the Bureau. He did a wonderful job as the director of the Bureau. He has nothing but the highest reputation. I don't know him personally, but when I was in the White House counsel's office, I worked for Fred Fielding, who thinks the world of Bob Mueller. The guy I have trouble with is Comey. I've got some real serious concerns about Comey and the way that he's conducted himself, but not about Mueller. And their friendship is vastly overstated. That's simply not true. And, we live in a world of exaggeration via the web, whereas I used to turn you on or Pete Williams on or some Justice Department correspondent on, and they just play it down the middle and you'd get it. But now everything is amplified and we've monetized extremism. So there's an advantage in trying to get an ever-increasing volume going to attract the ever smaller slice of crazy people. Attacking Bob Mueller, the Marine, he's got a reputation as being a brass-knuckle prosecutor, but that's okay.
Right.
That's what we kind of want at the Bureau.
Well, let me ask you about Comey, because you were saying that you've got real problems with Comey. You don't think that he's lied in front of Congress, do you?
No, I hesitate to say anyone's lied. I have trouble with him not seeing beneath his nose that Lisa Page and Peter Strzok are having an affair, that they didn't get fluttered, that all those text messages got through, and that the head of their counterintelligence division had it in for a candidate in a national party election. As I said, I'm a DOJ alum. The FBI is full of 14,000 nonpartisan people. I'm shocked, Dan, that went on, that they got that high, that they carried on a vendetta. It's clear to me there was a vendetta, and the dossier is clearly to me fruit of the poison tree, anything that flows
really?
Of it. And I did the FISA applications for two attorney generals, for Smith and for Meese. If they lied in a FISA application, hell is going to be paid. And so I'm just sitting back and waiting.
But where's the evidence that they lied in the FISA application?
The question about how did they get to Carter Page? I just want to know on what basis did they have to go to the judge and say, we have a legitimate suspicion that Carter Page is an agent of a foreign entity. And thus far, it appears to be only the Steele dossier and media reports leaked by Christopher Steele to support the Steele dossier. And so when they show me a real reason to go, because FISA warrants are hard to get.
But
they violate fundamental rights.
But the Carter Page was being examined well before Steele was even handing in his dossier notes, right?
Examine and cut loose. examined and cut loose.
But the point is, but
to me,
yeah.
Once you get out from underneath the warrant, they've got to come back and have a standalone argument. In fact, the fact that he'd been cut loose once would have made it harder to get a second FISA warrant on him in the absence of new and compelling evidence, which I think is the Steele dossier. Again, I'm cautious because I don't have the clearances and you don't have the clearances, mm-hmm. and we haven't read this stuff yet, and the redactions are enormous. But I think Comey let the management get away from him at that agency. And I'll tell you, if my number two and number three had an animus that deep against someone, I'd take him off the case just like Mueller took him off the case in a nanosecond.
Yeah, but Mueller took him off the case. I mean, you know, they did say negative things about Hillary Clinton, too. But they weren't as bad as what they said about Trump. And, you know, and the fact that the IG report didn't show any indications that they, you know, used that. And think about it also. He was responsible, was he not? Strzok was part of the reason that Comey came out 11 days before the election and announced that they were reopening the investigation into Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, well, my theory of this is always look for an explanation that accounts for all of the facts. Here they assume that Secretary Clinton was going to be President Clinton. Here they assume that they needed to make a show of doing as much as possible without actually injuring her.
What?
Here they did all of that to just make sure that they put, you know, they connected the dots and could prove that the FBI, they're always protecting the FBI, that they had done their jobs. But in this case, they actually materially went over the line, I think, vis-a-vis Trump. And the impeachment proceeding is going to be unique. I wrote about this in the Washington Post yesterday. Trump's going to embrace it like a grizzly bear. He's going to love impeachment.
Yeah.
Because he's going to, unlike the other guys, they hated it, Nixon and Clinton. He's going to be rolling around in it like, you know, kids in a dirt playground. Because he's going to love the brawl. And he's going to go after Strzok every day.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. But it doesn't really address the issue if Strzok was out to get Trump. You know, I mean, I hear your argument that, you know, they were just trying to cover themselves because they assumed Hillary Clinton was going to be president. But, you know, it wasn't helpful to Hillary Clinton at all. And if Strzok was trying to help Donald Trump, help Hillary Clinton, he would have said, we shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be making this announcement.
Context is everything, though, Dan. Nobody, not the Russians, not the FBI, not you, not me, thought she was going to lose. I was on the set at NBC that night. You know, I was looking up when I left 30 Rock at 2 a.m. in the morning to see if building, you know, bodies were coming off of the building. Nobody thought she was going to lose. And so they had a lot of license to make it look like they'd done a good job. And that just accounts for all the facts, which is, yeah, ding her up a little bit. We'll preserve our reputation. There are a couple of text messages. Boy, she's going to be mad at us, but she'll let us go. It is a very unfortunate chapter. It goes back to COINTELPRO, and you know what that is, and you'll have to explain it to your audience someday. It's Hoover-esque what they did.
I don't know. I don't see the evidence of it. This has been the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio.